Creep on in, on in, on in. Welcome to a storm of spoilers off season tour. Say goodbye to the Whisper. That was it.
Oh, last no.
The end of the off season tour.
Yeah, it's it. It's done. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and my other would be named Gadget.
Oh, my name is Joanna Robinson. My other would be named Lilith.
And I'm Neil Miller, and my other would be named Jeremiah.
Why are we discussing names of others? Because we are going to be talking about Jordan Peele's new horror movie, Us, which comes out this weekend. We'll be doing it in normal Storm of Spoilers fashion with calm sections and storm sections. Storm being where the spoilers are. See title of podcast. This week's bonus segment will be coming at you on Friday if you are a subscriber at patreon.com/... Storm of Spoilers at the Maester or Small Council level. They're both very good levels that include multiple perks, including a bonus segment from us. And, of course, this is the time of the week we remind you that Con of Thrones is coming up this July 12th through 14th in Nashville. Tickets are on sale now at conofthrones.net. Enter Storm at checkout to get $5 off. And we will see you there after the final season of Game of Thrones, the season that is the thing making us stop the off season, the on season, if you will. Before I start rambling, Joanna, do we have any reviews?
We have a couple, and they're short, so I'm going to zip right through them. We have one from Ping G, a great companion to Pop Culture 5 Stars. There are many pop culture podcasts around, but this is my favorite, hands down. I started for Game of Thrones, of course, but as the podcast has broadened its perspective, I found it to be an indispensable companion. For example, it kept me from falling down in 2018. Still growing strong in 2019. Yes. It's rare now that I don't listen to the calm before seeing a movie or show, especially in a time with mountains of content raining down at all times. The show is helped me decide what to see next. So that's one. Then we got one from Sammy from Ohio. The title is Pew Pew 5 Stars. 5 stars for 5+ years of excellent content. Hope it continues after Game of Thrones ends. Thanks, Sammy. And then the last one is a 1-star review from CMDM. Come on, ellipses is the title of the review, and CMDM says, why do these three think they're so funny and clever? Boring and pretentious, to put it mildly. Stop. So, that is CMDM, who I guess doesn't understand.
I don't know. Everyone else says we're pretty clever and funny.
I mean, you definitely don't have to like the show, but here's a tip to CMDM and anyone else who's listening in frustration. You also don't have to listen to our show. I think you should, but like, if it bugs you, why? Life's too short.
You could still listen to Tool's music, buddy. I'm sorry about all the things I said. just because I said you were an asshole, and that might be true, shouldn't take the enjoyment of Tool's music away from you. That's so, what I learned this week.
Anyway, that's our second 1-star review in a couple weeks. So if you have a 5-star review in you and want to leave it,
it's just been gestating.
Please do let it out of yourself and help us escape this 1-star cycle. Also, I just want to really quickly mention before we move on that if you are a Storm of Spoilers Patreon subscriber, the books we're reading in our book group are Catch-22 and this month, Joseph Heller's Catch-22, and next month, Good Omens by Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett. We had a couple people join the Patreon just because they heard that. So I want to make sure that like everyone hears that. Catch-22. Gonna be a Hulu show with George Clooney. Great. Good Omens. Gonna be an Amazon show with everyone you've ever liked. So, you know, join us. It's really fun. Anyway, moving on.
To Neil.
Yes. Guys, that means it's time to go storm chasing.
Pew, 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 pew.
A couple extra pews this week. This is where we talk about one movie, show, story, idea, etc. that we are chasing this week. But I first want to start by piggybacking off of what Joanna was talking about with the Patreon. If you are a member of the Patreon at the small council level, that means you're part of the movie club. And this month, as you've heard, the movie club is more of a Game of Thrones club, which I think is pretty great. We have the results of the poll. It was very close. It was very close for two of us. Joanna's choice has won. Winter is Coming and The King's Road is what we'll be watching. The first two episodes of Game of Thrones got 46 votes to 42 for the season six pairing. And then my pairing did not get that many votes at all. But we are doing this on Sunday, the 24th, which is coming up very soon after this podcast drops. And we're going to do it at the time that Game of Thrones normally airs in the United States. So 9 o'clock Eastern or 8 o'clock Central or 6 o'clock Pacific. Is that right?
Sure is, bud.
Sometimes they move the time and I don't know how.
You mean daylight savings time?
Yeah, they try to save daylight and then they move it. And it's very confusing. So there we go. March 24th, 9 o'clock Eastern. We will be joining together, syncing up, and watching two straight episodes of Game of Thrones. The first two, which are going to be very relevant to season eight, we think. Moving on to the storm that I am chasing this week. I would like to say for the record, and more as like a piece of therapy, that I watched Aquaman twice this weekend. The first time my roommate Theo went to bed halfway through, and then we had to watch it all over again. And I will say this about Aquaman. It's probably like at least two, if not three movies in one. And I don't understand why DC keeps doing this thing. I feel like it's like, to me, I always read it as like a panic thing where they're so panicked that Marvel has 20 movies that they're like, we have to make three at a time. And if they just would have slowed down and maybe made this like a trilogy, it wouldn't have felt so goddamn long.
Well, they're going to go back. Like how we're going to get that solo movie about the trench people. There's going to be an Aquaman spinoff trilogy
sure.
or something.
And listen, I'm for it because the movie is super fun. Jason Momoa is doing all his Jason Momoa stuff. and the action's pretty fun. And even the goofy, like, de-aging CGI stuff they do in that movie to everyone but Nicole Kidman is really weird looking. But I got over it because the movie just has a really great vibe to it. So Aquaman, DC, please slow down. You can be better than this. Like, just slow down a little bit and you'll be great.
No, fuck you, Neil. Five Joker movies.
Right. Stop panicking. It's fine. So that's the storm that I'm chasing. I don't think I need to watch Aquaman ever again. Joanna, what are you chasing this week?
Well, since we're all like quite busy trying to consume content, I thought I would recommend something that will not take much of your time. And it is a podcast called The Memory Palace, which actually my sister recommended to me. And it is done out of, I believe, Portland. The host is Nate DeMayo. And here's the great thing about The Memory Palace podcast. The episodes are short and they are infrequent. So they're like under 10 minutes, basically. And Nate DeMayo,
it's hard to find a good podcast that's that short.
Yeah. What Nate does, I mean, it's basically like a really fun, like, moth story or like segment of This American Life, basically. But Nate DeMayo has this like really beautiful voice. He has a really like sort of lyrical way of writing these episodes. And what he does is he takes like a sort of a slightly unknown moment in history, he talks about it, and then he talks about sort of its ramifications. So like the latest one, which is the one my sister sent to me, is about starlings in the United States, how they got here. I knew that factoid. I knew why starlings are in the United States, but like and I won't spoil it for you why they're in the United States if you don't know, but like he talks about why they got here and then sort of the aftermath of it and loops it back sort of lyrically into the beginning of it. So, you know, like if you like NPR, this is for you. If you don't like NPR, don't listen to this podcast. You know what I mean? The other one that he did that I really liked is about the washing machine. And I think it's called Revolutions or Revolution. And it's crazy, crazy fascinating 10 minutes all about how like the evolution of the washing machine and what it did for like women's liberation, because women used to have to spend all of their time actively washing clothes. And then when it came to, like, anyway, it's fascinating. It's really, really fascinating. And there's like, some sound design in there too. So yeah, it's a beautiful piece of art, really good storytelling. You learn some information, and you're just sort of like swept away while doing so. So the Memory Palace, hosted by Nate DeMeo. Find it where you find all your podcasts.
I love it. I'm going to listen to it. Definitely, for sure. But this is probably about to get out of hand because Dave, you're also about to recommend a podcast, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to recommend a podcast.
I'm going to have a lot of podcasts to listen to by the end of this segment.
Well, this may or may not be for you. Let's find out.
Okay.
I went to dinner with a friend of mine that I hadn't seen in like 5 years, and it was great. And we spent most of the time catching up. But at some point, she mentioned that she had recently become obsessed with true crime podcasts. And I was like, oh, well, let's have a discussion then. And we both opened up our podcast players on our phones and had almost everything in common, except this one thing that I had discovered recently. It started in February, pegged to a TNT fiction show that apparently was made by Patty Jenkins and had... Oh,
what was it? Someone named Chris in it?
I Am the Night, yes.
Yeah.
On TBS.
It had the Pine, I believe.
Chris Pine, yes.
That particular version of Chris.
So I didn't watch the fiction show, but I did stumble across the podcast. It's called Root of Evil, The True Story of the Hodel Family and the Black Dahlia. It is a true crime podcast that has a crazy premise of these two women who their mother passed away in 2017, but it's their mother's story that became the I Am the Night miniseries, investigating their family line, who ends up being somebody that is probably the Black Dahlia killer, as well as sort of delving into how surrealism of that time period in Los Angeles was like sort of all about degrading women, and their grandfather might have been part of some sort of weird surrealist sex circle, and then that trauma is passed down to their mother and their grandmother, who like tries to get away. It's this crazy story. There have been 6 episodes that have come out so far. The latest one came out today, but it's one of those podcasts where they're slowly going back through time, and they're going to basically present all this evidence that their relative was the person who killed the Black Dahlia. But each mini podcast episode story is sort of an amazing true crime story in itself, about like there's the guy they think is the Black Dahlia murderer also went to trial for having sex with his daughter, but got off through like a weird series of knowing certain people in the police and providing like sexually transmitted disease protection in the city of Los Angeles. It's a very, very weird podcast. And it's very, if you don't like stories of, you know, victims of sexual abuse, then I would say don't even give this podcast a try. But if you like true crime that just seems to go like rabbit hole deeper into weird avenues that you aren't expecting when you're like, let's figure out who murdered the Black Dahlia, or let's figure out who my grandpa is, then this podcast might be for you. It's called, Root of Evil.
Fascinating. I will say this. As someone who watches a lot of basketball on television, I've seen ads for I Am the Night like 10,000 times, and they now make more sense after you describe that podcast. I was always like, why is there a bunch of weird sex stuff in this Black Dahlia show? But now I know.
Cool. Yep.
All right. Well, we've chased them all down.
Good job, everyone. So, Joanna, I hear you've taken the step that I have yet to take in protecting your valuable wall art. Did you send a Spider-Man poster in the mail? I got a tingle.
I did not send a Spider-Man poster in the mail. I used this service, Framebridge, that we've talked about on the podcast before, to frame something that I'm really excited about. One of my listeners from another podcast I do, Cast of Kings, did this amazing artwork for our podcast. drawing of myself and my co-host Dave Chen in Game of Thrones regalia. You might have seen it. I put it on social media. It's just like the cutest thing ever. And it was a digital file. She sent me like a high-res version of the digital file. And I was like, God, I want to get this like printed and framed. Well, luckily, I've got FrameBridge. And
so I could just amazing.
Like, upload the file to their website, pick sort of my, you know, what kind of frame I wanted, whether or not it wanted it mounted, what kind of glass I wanted, what kind of matting, et cetera, et cetera. It's super easy. And then it was just done. Voila. And it's going to show up in the mail, beautifully framed. And you don't even have to take my word for it, because one of our listeners, actually, Storm of Spoilers, already used the FrameBridge service that we talked about a little while ago to get this really, really cool poster frame that I saw they put up in our Patreon Slack.
Yeah, I saw that. Gorgeous. It was a very cool poster.
Gorgeous. And they got like a nice discount, because we've got, you know, a little discount thing going for our listeners. So yeah, I'm really into FrameBridge, guys. I'm all for it.
Absolutely. So if people want to do this, if they want to join in, instead of the hundreds that you pay at a framing store, prices just start at $39 and all shipping is free. Plus our listeners get 15% off their first order at framebridge.com when they use the code SOS.
What do they do if they don't have like a file to upload, but they just have like art in their home, like a Spider-Man poster or something like that? How do they get that art to framebridge.com?
You can go to framebridge.com and upload a photo of the stuff that you want them to frame, or the thing that you want them to frame, and they will send you packing materials to safely transfer your stuff to their framing dojo. I assume they have a framing dojo of some kind.
Yes. I mean, this is a dojo level skill. I'll do this part. I should get started today. You get started today. Frame your photos or send the perfect gift for weddings, birthdays, and special events. Go to framebridge.com and use the promo code SOS. You'll save an additional 15% off your first order. Just go to framebridge.com, promo code SOS. Framebridge.com, promo code SOS. Dojo level skills. Guys, we're here for the main event. We're going to talk about the horror of Mr. Jordan Peele. Now, first, I want to tell you that we are not going to spoil Us, which I think is spoilable.
Oh, yeah. Super spoilable.
we're going to layer in some calm talk about Us, some non-spoiler talk up here in front, along with, you know, talking about Get Out, because I think it's interesting to talk about the two films kind of together. And one of us might have seen some of The Twilight Zone. So if you are a member of CBS All Access, in like a scant couple of weeks, you will be getting access to new Twilight Zone episodes. I'm going to spoil it, just this little part for you. Joanna is the one who's seen some of them. But we will get some calm thoughts on her. Let's open it up to the floor. Neil, is there a Jordan Peele style you could nail down now? And can you describe that to people that have only seen Get Out, maybe?
Maybe. I was trying to think about what connects the two that are not, you know, spoilery things. Actually, I don't know if there's a ton of, like, spoilery stuff that connect these two movies. They're very different films. But from a technical standpoint, there are things that Jordan Peele is doing in his thrillers that I think are really interesting. They are sort of Hitchcockian in the way that he is using sound and sound design and score. And I know, you know, with Us, a lot has been made of the song in the trailer. It's great. You have no idea what you're in for in this movie with regard to music. It's great. But also, I was struck with if you combine what he did and what John Krasinski did with A Quiet Place, I think there's some really interesting, exciting things in the horror realm being done with sound. And I found this out even in a theater that had maybe the worst audience I've ever been with. Like, it was very much when I went to go see Us yesterday, like, it was a lot of the don't go in there people who scream don't go in there to people on screen. Which is super fun, and I am like actually kind of into it. But the sound design of Us still stuck out to me, even though it was a very loud audience. So I thought that's actually a good thing. And it wasn't just that it was turned up loud, it's that it's very intentional. And they do a lot of the same stuff in Get Out, where, you know, like the teacup, like who can forget the way that sounds in that scene? So I think he's creating, that's sort of one of the things I'm interested to see in Twilight Zone, if he carries it over, because the TV sort of very different in the way you might want to use sound, because you don't really know what people's setups are going to be. But I think in the two films that we've seen from him in the last couple of years, he's really got a sense of creating a full atmosphere for you that challenges, you know, as many senses as possible. So I'm really into that, because visually both movies are gorgeous. So yeah, I think that's probably what links them together in my mind. Yeah.
I was okay. So I have a more difficult question for Joanna, and I think also by being more difficult, it also has no correct answer. But Joanna, is Get Out has a heavy satirical element that I think manages to play through the horror. Is Us a satire?
No. Would it be a satire of? And is Get Out even a satire?
Well, this is, we actually, my roommate and I, after the movie, had this discussion about, like, does Us feel political? Whereas, like, Get Out felt like it was like a clear statement of...
Us is extremely political. I think Us is even more political.
Interesting.
Well, that's based a lot on, like, I talked to the producer when I was at South By and stuff that Jordan said, which is that it's, like, I think I can talk about this in the comms section, because what's clear from the trailer, like, we're allowed to spoil the trailer, right, for in this section.
I think you're allowed to spoil the premise, but I don't know if we want to go, like, shot by shot through the trailer, because I don't...
I'm not going shot by shot. All I'm saying is that there's a set of characters played by Lupita Nyong'o, Winston Duke, and a couple kids. And then there's another set of characters played by Lupita Nyong'o, Winston Duke, and a couple kids, right? That's the premise of the film.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's the premise of all the advertising. which is to say, we're talking about a movie about doubles, right? And then what follows, which I think is also clear from the trailer and not a shot-by-shot analysis, is largely a home invasion horror movie, right? Or at least... partially a home invasion horror story. So, for sure. Like, what you have then is the fact that the person who is attacking you looks exactly like you. And what both Jordan Peele and his producer said is that this is a story about how instead of what Jordan Peele said at the premiere of South by Southwest is like, what if instead of the enemy being some like Muslim or Mexican who's trying to come into our country, or, and this is where he nimbly sidesteps saying Trump voter, someone who doesn't live near you who voted differently than you do. What if instead of the enemy is ourselves? And what if we look inward and instead of tearing pointing the finger and tearing the other apart, what if we look at the damage we're doing to ourselves, within ourselves? Not literally like, I am my own worst enemy, but maybe like the person near me. I'm attacking the person near me, sort of thing. And so that, I think, is an intensely and specifically now political statement. I know that this film was definitely... this is a film that Jordan Peele intended to make before Get Out. This has been kicking around. He's just been like updating it and making alterations and blah, blah, but it's a concept that he had kicking around for a long time. The version we're seeing now is a very 2019 Trump's America movie. And so in that case, the politics might be more obscure. I think a lot of what he's doing in the movie generally is more complicated and more obscure than what Get Out is, because Get Out is like, actually genuinely popcorn cinema, and this is much more challenging, but I think it's more political actually in the end than Get Out is.
Interesting. Well, and it makes sense, because as when you explain it like that, I see it now in the movie, but watching the movie, I don't feel like I saw it, or I don't feel like it wasn't very, the movie's not very ham-handed. Not to say that Get Out is, but Get Out just felt more sharp. What it was trying to say.
Yeah, I don't think you walk out of Get Out and being like, I don't know what that movie's about. But I definitely think you walk out of Us and be like, I don't know what that movie was about. You know what I mean?
I will say this though. It is interesting that you say that Get Out is more popcorn entertainment than Us. I sort of feel the opposite, because Us I found to be way more fun than I was expecting it to be. Like, it's funny. Very funny. And so, and Get Out is very stressful It, very good, but very stressful and funny in little bits. But it's interesting to me, having observed a lot of conversation about this movie before actually seeing it, where I sort of was expecting something, I don't know, maybe slightly darker. And we can get into this when we get into the storm, but it's like, there's a lot of this movie that's just straight up entertaining. And most of it is Winston Duke doing Winston Duke stuff. But so yeah, I guess I felt different. I felt the opposite way about the two movies, where it's like, for me, if I was going to go with a group and like get really pumped up about like a fun movie experience, I feel like Us might actually be the one I would choose. Get Out would be the one I would make all my friends watch at home, and then we'd have a long chat after.
I'm going to come down right in between you guys.
Excellent.
In that I think that both movies have like certain popcorn elements, and I think Get Out is a movie that, like, once you start recognizing its beats, you like get on the movie's side, and that's where the whole police lights confusion at the end plays so well, and why he, you know, wisely changed it from his original ending. I think Us, I was surprised how from moment to moment I was being entertained, and I don't think I had, although I might have had like a slight idea of plot wise what's going on, I don't think I had the full idea of what the film was saying until the very end, because like Neil, you were saying that like the use of score, especially, and in this case a lot of cinematography cues, sort of culminate in a moment right at the end of the movie where it, for me, it didn't play like a plot twist, like a Sixth Sense sort of plot twist. It played like a gut punch where it's like the movie's actually been about more than you've always thought it was. Where I think Get Out has like a twist where you're like, yeah, something's wrong with these white people. Oh, that's wrong with these white people. Woo, yeah, fuck yeah, we're on the side. But then I think Us is more, because it's more open-ended in what it's trying to say and maybe more up to our interpretation, I immediately, like, I took what I felt was a lot of notes about things on the periphery, because, like, as soon as this movie starts and we're slowly pushing in on a video shelf and then you could see certain videos on it, I'm like, oh, shit, I gotta be writing these things down. So I'm, like, writing down Bible verses and I'm writing down all this stuff. The movie ends and I'm like, I didn't even write down enough. I feel like Us is gonna be a movie that I'm gonna have to watch again and again to try to figure out what I think it's about.
Can I just say that, like, so Slate.com already has their explainer up about that Bible verse. But what's really fun is like when that Bible verse shows up, which it does very early in the film and not for the last time. I quickly wrote it down, and then I was sitting next to Lindsay Romaine, and Dustin Rolls was behind me. Lindsay Romaine of Nerdist, Dustin Rolls of Vidiva.com. And both of them like saw me write that down and then got their paper and pens out and wrote down the Bible verse. So like, but that's the thing is like, Jordan Peele is kind of going around explaining some bits of Us. He's talked to Up Rocks about like Lost Boys references and stuff like that. But there's a way in which he broke down Get Out, like every single meaning of every single frame, that like, according at least to the producer in the film, he's not going to do for Us. That he wants to, you know, as we've all three of us said in our own way, I don't think you walk out of Us like really having exactly a firm grasp on what you just saw. Mm-hmm. That it's a movie that's going to reward rewatching and discussing and stuff like that. And I think Jordan Peele really wants us to have that space to discuss, to have multiple interpretations. You know, the producer told me he's like, he doesn't think Jordan Peele will ever explain the end of Us. He might decide to make a fool out of me. There might be like a post up tomorrow where he talks about it or whatever, but like,
it's going to be on Vanity Fair and he's going to have like a grease pen and he's going to be like, here's the secret. It's in the mirror.
Those are good.
I bet you didn't think to look in the mirror for
those
this.
Those are good videos, by the way.
They are good videos. I'm just saying that would be the perfect place to do it.
But I like, and he did that for Get Out, but I don't think he's going to do it for Us, and maybe he will, but like, I like the idea of that, of like, let Christopher Nolan never tell us exactly what happened at the end of Inception, and let Jordan Peele never tell us exactly what is meant by the end of us. I like that. Let the mystery be sort of thing. Same with Leftovers.
I like it too, but I think if there's, this goes back to the first question. If there's something I've learned, or at least I think I've learned about Jordan Peele as a filmmaker or as like a person, I guess, is that he's just like us. He's a huge nerd. And that's why he's an obsessive. That's sort of the level you get to. And, that's what makes his films fun. They're so detail oriented and you can pick them apart. But I think you're right. He really did explain a lot of Get Out, which I enjoyed and I think he probably enjoys too. But, yeah, it'd be interesting to see if he can leave it alone. Christopher Nolan is the like next level restraint.
He's gonna also have, you know, like some Twilight Zones to go around and explain.
Sure. So maybe that's the other benefit that he has. He has like 10 million things coming out, so he can sort of move on to the next thing.
So here's what's interesting about us is like when we walked out of the movie at South by Southwest, a bunch of people were like, oh my God, this is his masterpiece. And actually I'm like quoted on the advertising saying it's a masterpiece, which I guess I said somewhere in my article, but, and I agree with that. I probably said it's a masterpiece of and some qualifier, but ads just snip those qualifiers out. But what's undeniably true about us, and I've already said this, is much more challenging than Get Out. And so I don't think it's going to, not that this is necessarily the most interesting thing to talk about, I don't think it's necessarily going to be popular. It's going to have a huge opening weekend because people loved Get Out, people love Jordan Peele, blah, blah. I don't think it's going to have legs. I think you're going to see a real sudden drop. I think the cinema score is going to be low because I think people are going to walk in with Get Out expectations and walk out being like, I don't know what that was. I don't think it's going to hurt Jordan Peele in the long run. He's doing fine. His third film is going to be great and interesting too. And I think what he's doing is great and interesting. And I love that he did this after Get Out when as like, once again, sorry to reference like the conversation I had with the producer, but like once again, his producer's like, he could have done a Star Wars. He could have done a Marvel movie. He could have done literally anything he wanted after Get Out and he wanted to do this. And so, you know, I think that's a really cool thing to witness.
I think we know for sure that he's on the level of, you know, all your auteur directors, your producer, writer, directors that, you know, have previously been white. But now there's Jordan Peele and I'm excited to see where he goes. I think Us bought me, like Get Out obviously bought, you know, some things to like, let's check out Jordan Peele and see what he does. But then all the response to that was like, he's going to do the Twilight Zone. He's going to executive produce, you know, the Black Klansman. And I'm like, I don't know if this is all going in the right direction. But now he's bought like decades of leeway with me. Like I saw a tweet comparing him to like everybody saying he's the new Spielberg, but he's really the new M. Night Shyamalan. And I'm like, that's fine. M. Night Shyamalan's making movies he wants
to make. I don't
know,
though. He feels like he's the first Jordan Peele.
I like that. Yeah,
fair. He's a better, legit better filmmaker than Shyamalan.
He is definitely a better filmmaker than Shyamalan. And I like Shyamalan, but I
agree disrespect
with that.
To my guy.
Yeah.
M. Night.
But I think it's what's incredible, and you don't even need, like, what was incredible about Get Out is that I don't think you even needed, like, two dots on the chart you don't even need like two data points is a more accurate way of saying it to like feel like you understand that Jordan Peele is like a filmmaker with a vision and a voice. Like I had no doubt after I saw Get Out that like Jordan Peele just skyrocketed up into like that sort of auteur ranking, you know what I mean? And the fact that he could have done a Star Wars or Black Klansman, like they brought him Black Klansman. He's like, no thanks. Let's find someone else to do it. I'll produce it. That's because it wasn't the story he wanted to tell. And so like, he's just interested in the stories that he wants to tell. And that's like auteurism. That's Christopher Nolanism. You know what I mean? Like Spielberg doesn't even have that anymore, you know? And so like, I just have
he would have done Alita like he intended.
I have enormous respect for Jordan Peele and for what he's doing. The opportunities he's grabbing for himself with this
and for others. He's producing the Candyman movie, which
Yes.
Nia DaCosta is going to direct in that. I'm super excited, especially after seeing Aquaman, as we previously discussed, because I don't think that guy was very good in Aquaman, but I can see Candyman in there. Sorry, that was a total tangent.
No, no, that's okay. The other thing that I want to talk about in this comm section is the absolutely like barn burning performance from Lupita Nyong'o.
Hell yeah.
What's true about, and Winston Duke's fine in this, Liz Moss is great in this, Tim Heidecker is really fun in this, but like, Lupita Nyong'o, my colleague, right before we walked into us, my colleague Nicole was like, can you believe that, this is Lupita's first leading performance? And I was like, holy shit. Like, how is that true? She won an Oscar so many years ago, and this is her first leading role in a film. Like, that's insane. And, she just like dives the fuck in. And as much as you think you know what her performance is from the trailer, you have no fucking idea what she's doing in this movie. I think she's just like, like everyone, I've always thought, like, yep, Lupita Nyong'o's great. She deserved that Oscar. She's fantastic in this. She's great in that. She is, like, next level in this. And, like, she just, like, you know, she's such a beautiful woman. And she just, like, no vanity, just, like, turned herself into a monster. And it's really, I was just floored by it.
So. It's really fantastic. Here's what I think helps. This is a Jordan Peele thing. This is not to take away from Lupita Nyong'o, who's fantastic. Both of his movies really do a good job of like keeping close to their center, like hewing very close to a single perspective. It's not a perfect thing. Like it's not like the movie is not from a specific POV, but there's a magnetism that like Daniel Kaluuya's character has in Get Out. And the same thing is immediately apparent about her character. In Us, like it is obviously there's like the movie starts with story about her as when she was young, but she really is the gravitational force of this movie. And it's like the perfect confluence of like writing, casting, acting, all that good stuff. It's mm-hmm. just
she's like Poochie.
Great.
Whenever yeah. she's not on screen, the other character should be asking, where's yeah. Lupita?
Well, and honestly, there's not a lot of the movie that I remember where she's not on screen.
I don't know. I mean, the only other person I would
except
give that,
for the Winston Duke stuff.
No, I would say the only person I would give that to is Elizabeth Moss in this movie. Cause,
like, oh, that's fair.
There's yeah. some Elizabeth Moss stuff where I'm just like, okay, give it to me, all of it. and something that like all three of us are a little underqualified to talk about. To that point, but something that I've been reading about with a lot of curiosity since we've seen like the come up of certain directors like Barry Jenkins, et cetera, is the treatment of like dark skin color on screen and what, like how to shoot it and what that, you know, how to shoot it, how to light it in a way that brings it out. In a way that we haven't seen done well necessarily in Hollywood before. There's a lot of great articles on this from people who know a lot more than I do about it. But I will say that like both Daniel Kaluuya and, Lupita Nyong'o, because of the way they're shot, because of their specific features and because of the way they're like the lightness of their, the whites of their eyes like goes with their skin. Like there's so many close-ups of them. I don't know if this is like weird or problematic for me to talk about. I hope it's okay just because like I have read a lot of articles on this.
I tried in Moonlight back in the day and it worked out fine. So I think you're okay.
Yeah. Like there is something about that that is unique to these, directors and their DPs who know what they're doing. In a way that Hollywood maybe hasn't known what's doing before.
For sure. So. And then like, there were times in the history of film, the chemical process development of film, that like some of those shots wouldn't have been possible in the depth they are. So it is absolutely amazing to see them and something goes off in your brain. Even as someone who just watches a lot of movies, they're like, this is really well done because you don't see this just historically. Institutional white supremacy.
Yeah. Speaking of which, in preparation for this, like knowing the limit of, what two white people and a brown person can say about a film about like for and by Black people. I was looking around for, like, you know, essays I could read. You know, it's early yet. Like, Us isn't technically out yet. So, you know, there will be more. My colleague, Cam Chaos and Collins on Vanity Fair, I know, has an essay coming that I can't wait to read. But as of right now, Wednesday, when we're recording this, there's actually very little from Black writers about this movie, and Black writers are who I'm most interested in reading on this film. I will recommend there's a great profile on both this, on Jordan and about, this film on, The Undefeated by Kelly Carter called Scarier and Better Than You Even Think, : Jordan Peele Sees Us. And, you know, there's some great stuff in there about, like, the actual, like, the color of the skin tone in this movie. It's not just that, like, you have a Black family in this movie. It's that Lupita Nyong'o and Winston Duke are dark skinned, two dark skinned, people who you often don't see.
And then they shoot a bunch of it at night, which traditionally would have been just, it's hard to light anything at night.
Well, and there's times that they're only lighting the eyes intentionally. Yeah, it's like every single trick is being used.
The best example of this that you can see in the trailers, if you're not seen it yet, is the shot of the little girl when her eyes go wide. It's one of the most incredibly lit shots I've seen in a movie in maybe 5 or 10 years. It's just like the way they shoot that scene is magnificent.
Well, maybe we'll use this as a slow transition into the Twilight Zone, but this movie opens with like a short flashback. That is, when it was over, I'm like, if this whole movie is that intense, then like, kind of like, fuck it. I have to be here, but I'm going to be very uncomfortable because it, strikes like this tone, this ominous tone through, motion. Having only seen it once and it being so affecting, it's hard to pinpoint critically exactly how it works. But it definitely has something to do with like the lighting and the motion of the camera through these spaces and what's there around the corners.
There's a lot of
where giant eyeballs in space are. Oh, sorry, I was trying to transition, but we can keep going.
Twilight Zone. So I cannot say very much about the Twilight Zone episodes that I've seen. I've seen 4 of them. I can sort of speak generally to it. One thing that I think is really fun that I think I can say is that, Jordan Peele, let's be clear about Jordan Peele's role in this, right? He's the executive producer on the series and he's, the narrator. So he does
the Rod Sterling part
of the episode. He's not the writer.
Consider the orange.
He's not the writer and he's not the director. And so I think to Neil's earlier like question of like use of sound or directorial intent or blah, 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 Twilight Zone, I don't think we should look for a lot of Jordan Peele in this because there's no formal showrunner on the show. I think he's just like putting his muscle behind it. I don't know how much artistically he actually had to do with the final product. As far as I can tell, one of the main powers behind the Twilight Zone, which is really fun, is Glenn Morgan, who's a great X-Files writer, and he's got a writing credit on like 2 of my favorite episodes that I saw so far. Jordan Peele's another fun thing about the intro that Jordan Peele does is it's not at the beginning of the episode. It's like each episode has like basically a cold open that ends with Jordan Peele sort of diegetically inserted into the episode to give you like that little intro. And that's a really fun, cute thing that they do. And, you know, obviously like what's funny about, you know, so this is the Twilight Zone. That's a known property. But I think what a lot of people who maybe haven't watched the Twilight Zone and are familiar with more recent television are going to be like, oh, this is like Black Mirror. It's like, yeah, Black Mirror, like is Twilight Zone, right? I just mean that like, you know, if you don't know what to expect from a Twilight Zone because you never watched Twilight Zone, like think Black Mirror, obviously, but less tech focused. Black Mirror is like technophobia. This is, you know, more weird, uncanny sort of things happening. One thing I noticed anecdotally as we talked about it, like my colleagues who have seen the episodes as we talked about it, And this is a similar thing I do with Black Mirror. Like, we don't call the episodes by the episode name. We call it by, like, the main person in it. So it's like, oh, the Kumail Nanjiani episode. Oh, the Steven Yeun episode. Oh, the, like, you know, whatever. So, nice. You know, this is sort of like the way that you kind of center, or we've been centering our discussions on it. What else can I say about it that won't get me in trouble? I think like Black Mirror and actually like, latter day X-Files, it's very spotty in quality. So some episodes, I always feel this about Black Mirror. Back when there was like 3 episodes per season, there would be like 2 that I loved and 1 that I didn't care for at all or ever need to revisit. You know what I mean? And of these 4, I would say that there are 2 that I really liked. And that's not a bad track record necessarily, but I don't think you should expect every single one to sort of blow your hair back. My favorite is the Steven Yeun episode. It's written by Glenn Morgan and directed by Anna Lilian Amanpour. So.
Oh, hell yeah.
What could go wrong with that combination? And then, I guess the last thing I'll say, the other vibe that it gives me, funnily enough, is Fargo, especially like Fargo season 1, FX Fargo. Yeah. So that's a thing too, especially that episode, which is the 4th episode. So if you're not really enjoying the first couple episodes, I would say at least like wait until you see the Steven Yeun episode. You want to see it anyway because he looks like extremely hot in a very beautiful suit. But also it's a good episode of TV. So
would you say that he is burning?
Yeah, he's burning up the he's my
which is a movie that's about to go on, what is it, Netflix is about to get burning?
Yeah. I just tried to make a Walking Dead joke and I couldn't even get close to it. Anyway, so that's the Twilight Zone. Well, I can't wait to hear what the rest of you guys think. You guys, maybe you have more of a history with like the original Twilight Zone than I do, but like, what do you, what did you like about it? What do you, like, the way I think of old Twilight Zone episodes is I'm like, the one where the people have pig noses and, the one where there's something on the wing of a plane. Like that's how I think of old Twilight Zone episodes, but like, do you guys have a different relationship with it or what's your?
No, it's pretty much that. I don't think I ever really, like, I don't have any deep affection or knowledge with regard to the old Twilight Zone. It's just like, you just remember them existing. And you remember some of the weirder ones, but
I guess someone who appreciates television writing and had to go to school for it. I really enjoyed the Twilight Zone. It's like a short story magazine that had like an editor you could trust. And it was one of the first like sort of anthology shows that packaged itself around that. I guess news shows did, but like a fiction show where you could, you know, have like these big, you know, sci-fi writers or whatnot dabble in television, or you could have these guys like grinding away in television writing and look at the toaster and be like, what if we all lived in the toaster? And be like, why not? Let's throw that idea around the room and see what comes out. And them ending up with all these like morality tales that have like memeable moments, like the, you know, something on the wing, or there's so much time in the world, or the guy with the lighter. So I'm looking for interesting stories, but I also, there's a lot of latitude for good moments, which I think in like the age of where we've all kind of gotten tired of movies that are too twisty in a post Sixth Sense age, I think there's still enough time to do a really like just for fun twist on television. Yeah. And still sort of let it be an actor and director showcase.
Yeah. And what I think is fun is that it's like, it's under an hour. You know, there's going to be a twist. It's not trying to like hide something from you or like, you know, it's just like, this is what this is. This is what we do. We're going to give you a little intro about it. So I don't know. I think it's a really interesting, fun thing. And it's fun to once again watch a thing, because I felt this way about Latter Day X-Files, actually even original X-Files, is like, my enjoyment deeply depends on who wrote the episode. And so like, if I see Glenn Morgan's name, I'm like, okay, this is going to be kind of interesting to me. You know, I really hope he gets his brother Darren to do some stuff, because Darren Morgan is the best X-Files writer, and that I would kill to see a Darren Morgan Twilight Zone episode. But yeah, and it's really fun to see all the talent, that is dying to line up to work, on something that has Jordan Peele's stamp on it. You know what I mean? Like John Cho, Jacob Tremblay, Steven Yeun, Greg Kinnear, you know, like all these.
Isn't Seth Rogen going to be in it at some point?
Possibly. Yes. Yes. Seth Rogen. Yeah.
One of the later episodes, I think.
Zazie Beetz, Betty Gabriel, Chris O'Dowd, you know, all these great people, and like an effortless, I think, it's one of those effortlessly diverse things. Do you know what I mean? Where you don't feel like they're trying to tick boxes, but it's just sort of like they cast who they want.
It's just like they got a bunch of cool people.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah, I like those. Yeah. Those are my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. All right. Before we take our break, I want to let you know what's on the other side. We're going to be talking about Us, which comes out when you get this podcast basically tonight. So really suggest to you that if you want to see Us and not know anything about Us, which has many things that can't be spoiled, you press pause. This file, you've already listened to half of this file or more than half of this file, so it'll be back and still here for you. It'll be here for you when you get back, is how that sentence is supposed to work. But yes, spoiler warnings, etc. We'll see you after this break.
All right, we thought we were done thanking all of our small council people for the month of March, but then we got a whole bunch of new people right at the end. I think people are ramping up for Game of Thrones, so thank you to our new subscribers. We're going to kick off by thanking Todd Busey, possibly, Nathaniel Steyer, and Tay. Thank you so much.
And I would like to thank Darth Fishius, Rebecca Seemers, Logan Wagner. And Logan Wagner. That's how you end lists.
And I have two people to thank. I would like to thank Kevin Mullaney and Carol Blaine. Thank you all so very, very much.
Does it? We did it.
And we're back to talk about Jordan Peele's Us again. Let me go back to the text message I sent yesterday after getting out of the movie to these fine people. How the hell are we going to do a column section on that? Congratulations, guys. We did it.
To which, didn't I respond, that so much of this, the end of this movie is in the trailer. Like, it's crazy to me.
Yes.
How much of, like, the last 20 minutes of Us is just right there in the trailer. It's nuts.
So
kudos to Jordan Peele for spoiling his own movie, and none of us knew it.
That's funny. One of the things I need to rewatch the trailer, I guess. Sorry.
Oh, yeah.
I saw it on TV last night right after we had come home from the movie. And, like, my roommate Theo and I are just sitting there like, holy shit. Like, there's a lot of stuff in that trailer that is, like, really, really right at the end there.
Can I alienate our listenership and do a not-so-humble brag?
Do it.
The final twist of the movie, I mean, maybe I shouldn't, like, build this up because like maybe everyone figured it out, but I knew that from the beginning. The wrong one came back. Of course the wrong one came back.
Yeah, I think that's the shot in the trailer that I was waiting for that didn't happen, is the little girl strangling the other little girl. And so by the end I was like, anyway.
I didn't remember that. It's just that
In the trailer.
It's just that they showed like when they show her in the like child not psychologist talking. Oh yeah, not talking in the child psychologist's office, I was like, that's the wrong one. I was like, that's the wrong one, obviously. Like, if you don't see what happened at the end of like an encounter in a funhouse, obviously something happened that's going to be revealed to us later. The wrong
this
one
just
came
goes
back
to show that you're a smarter movie watcher than I am, because this one got me. I became suspicious of her when she kind of like got like feral when she killed one of the teenagers and the kid, the son is watching. At that point I was like, is there something wrong with her, or is she just, or is like something inside her coming out, like an animal? Is he trying to say something about like animalism coming out when we're like in those like moments, like she becomes just like the bad people? And then at the end I was like, oh, okay, that all makes sense, I guess.
I figured it out. I figured out that was going to be the twist, when she was down in the basement and she saw the girl in the mirror. And I was like, oh shit, she's looking through things that are not actually her things. And then, but I don't, because of the metaphorical meanings of the tethered, and then the scene, the dance montage battle scene, that almost, it almost didn't matter that I knew the twist, which is what I was trying to hint towards in the calm section. It's like, I think it's obvious enough that, and especially if you're talking to people who are familiar with these types of horror tropes, as Jordan Peele obviously is, because he's, you know, talking about putting Lost Boys references in the opening, and it's a, like a Chud movie because everybody's underground in the very beginning.
Oh yeah, there's a Chud book on the next to the TV where she's watching Hands Across America.
There's also the Right Stuff VHS. Which also appears in Captain Marvel. Okay, go ahead.
So there are all these like Easter eggs. So I imagine there's enough people out there who know enough about body double movies to realize that this movie gets pretty deep into its plot without doing the one thing all body double horror does, which is that the one pretends to be the other. And so it kind of like dawns on them. But I think he's very smart about doling out this movie's plot and ramifications in the way that before I went in, I heard that it was, you know, like a basically a typical home invasion movie. So I was continually surprised as the movie started to expand to the point where like we cut away from the family back to Elizabeth Moss in group. And I'm like, oh shit. Like, why are we back watching these people? Like, I have no idea.
That's a second home invasion. Like, it's still a home invasion.
Right. But I mean, the first, a home invasion thriller is like The Strangers or like The Purge. Like, you know what you're
funny
getting.
Funny games, yeah.
It's only happening to the one family.
Right, and it's in, yeah, they play on that sort of trope in the sense that she calls the police and they're like, the police are 15 minutes out. And it doesn't really dawn on you until it's way too late that like something else must be going on. And by that point, you know, there are already the Elizabeth Moss family getting killed. But the way that this Get Out was like, we're in the house. We're going to figure out this mystery. He's going to be trapped in the house. Like, I understand playing on that motif. This one was like, no, we have more to say, so we need to expand it. It's like, now it's Hands Across America. And why is it Hands Across America? Because she randomly put that shirt on so she could steal the Thriller shirt. It's just like, ah, fuck. So now I like, you know, all the questions I have walking out of the movie, are like, when did the tethered notice that there was someone else there? Like, what is it about creativity and dance? Are we talking about like inter-American class? Are we talking about like actually splitting people? Super, super interesting and complex, because I think it can be like all of these things at once as long as it stays
vague. Also, why are they trying to use fluoride to control our minds? Because that is also brought up at the beginning of this movie, and I think is relevant to the ending, sort of.
Here's when you know that Lupita Nyong'o is definitely, there's something wrong with the character that you meet dressed in white at the beginning. Here's how you know. She is not interested in having sex with Winston Duke at every opportunity. No, this is a joke. Winston Duke is a beautiful human. I gotta say, I wasn't like deeply impressed with what Winston Duke was doing in this movie. I don't know why. It just didn't really land with me. Like, when we saw,
was it too Jordan Peele-y?
Well, when we, is that what you, yeah, I guess so. Like,
he's Winston Duke, in dropping his accent, right? Because he has an accent.
Yeah.
In dropping it, he sounds a lot like Jordan Peele.
Yeah,
it's,
I guess
just, it's sort of funny to me.
I guess it's kind of true. Like, it's when we saw it at South by, Jordan Peele got up and he was like, he was introducing the cast and the audience, and he's like, you know, Lupita Nyong'o's here, blah, blah. And he's like, and you won't be able to call him M'Baku after this performance. It's Winston Duke. He's amazing. He does all the stuff. And I was like, I think he's still a M'Baku to me. Like, no disrespect. I loved it. I love Winston Duke, but I think that this is not a role or roles that have proved to me that he can do anything.
What would he be from this movie? Crab Daddy? That's not better than M'Baku.
Craw Daddy,
that's it.
I will say this. The one thing I enjoyed about almost every performance in this movie is that everyone cranked it to 11. So, like, everyone tuned it up because they were like, let's just, I don't know if that's like a conscious thing they all decided, but like, everyone's performance is heightened. So you get imperfections in that, and I think Winston Duke is like a very totally fine actor, and I hope he becomes the Arnold Schwarzenegger of his generation and just gets a million great action movies. But he may not be like a super intensely good dramatic actor, whereas Lupita is, and that's very clear. And Elizabeth Moss is, and that's very clear in like 5 minutes. And then Tim Heidecker just shows up and does like Tim Heidecker shtick to 11.
Yeah.
So it's like everybody is just cranks it up, even the kids, which is what I really sort of like the underrated thing about Us is the two kids, I guess both playing the real versions of themselves and the tethered versions. The tethered versions are
nightmare stuff. Terrifying.
The first, this movie is so scary, by the way, for me. It's so scary. It's
very scary.
The scariest, first and most scary thing that happened is when that little mask boy sort of like scampers away. And I was like, what? Don't like the way he moves at all.
Right. Both of them move sort of unnaturally fast.
Yeah. Shahadi Wright, who plays the daughter, her tethered, like the creepy smile on her tethered.
The creepy
smile.
Oh
my God. Like that car scene where the two of them are just like going around the car. Oh my God. I was very
like,
upset.
It's like, it's like, yeah, like the Lupita's laugh is great, but like there's a scene where the daughter's tethered, she turns around and she's just got that smile. And I don't know. That's the one, like, too much. But yeah, it's great. It's scary as hell. And like I said, I found it extremely funny at times. So, you know, it's Jordan Peele. It's all there on screen.
It's got everything. Do you guys know are better at than I am at like picking out like visual language? Is there anything about like the shot composition or anything?
Oh yeah, totally.
Like, point out and talk to me about.
Especially now that we're in the storm, we can talk about. There's a scene at the end where Lupita's having a conversation with herself, and it's a close up of the tethered version, and the other one is in the background. And it's a split diopter shot. So you've seen stuff like this in like Carrie, more recently Suspiria, where they're both in focus.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can see both faces in focus and the rest is kind of blurry. And what I really loved about it is a lot of other filmmakers, they use it very quickly, but he keeps it going. Like that shot lasts a really long time. And it's weird the way like it brings you sort of into this intimate space with the character who has been at a distance for most of the movie, which is the tethered version, Lupita's tethered version. It's just incredible because and then it's the scene where she's just pouring out the story, you know, pouring out the horrors of her life underground. And, so that, like, visual, that's a deep cut horror. That goes back to what? Carrie and Suspiria did it. I think the original Suspiria also did it. It's just it's an old school John Carpenter. Like, he loved that shot. So, there's a lot of that. And then there's a lot of, I bet you, it's one of those things where I feel like once we start going back through it, we're going to find a lot of, like, 70s and 80s horror movie, like, shot.
Like one perfect shots, a few perfect
yeah,
shots.
Yeah, like you could set them next to each other and be like, yeah.
I bet there's a ton of like mirror stuff that you're probably, ton of mirror I probably stuff, subconsciously yeah. miss. I noticed that I think Lupita only eats red food on screen.
Ooh.
So like there's a breakfast where everybody's having like, you know, cereal or pancakes or something and she's just eating strawberries straight. And then she obviously turns down the rosé wine, but I'm not sure she ever. And that she has the red apple that she drops, but I don't think Lupita's character ever eats a non-red food.
Oh, and they do talk about there is a where her character talks or where the tethered character talks about the red chunky meat of rabbits that they had to eat. Yeah.
Can we just like okay? So Lupita like clear MVP of this movie
for sure,
but. I think, honestly, the shot of the movie that is gonna haunt my dreams forever is Elizabeth Moss silently, like,
screaming
and then laughing out the window. I was like, shit, this lady is so good.
Here's what's great about that is, the writer that I sent for Film School Rejects, Matt Monagle, who we know, he wrote about that kind of a scene in his review. And actually, I was like, we need to just take the name. We'll take Elizabeth Moss's name out of it, so it's not a spoiler. But like, he talked about like that scene. And so when the scene came, she sort of does it in the mirror first.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, that's what it was. and then she does the full scream thing. And I'm just like, oh, that's the one. That's what he was talking about. Like, it is a magnificent piece of acting.
Yeah. There's the lip gloss mirror scene. And then there's the post killing scream, scream laugh. But they're both like, hey, sweet, which is good because up until then, I was like, just Elizabeth Moss, because anybody could have been bitchy white wife to Tim Heidecker. That seems like I could have been easy. But then I was like, nope, yep, definitely Elizabeth Moss. Yeah. Good to know.
Yeah, no, when they cut over to their family, let's call them the white family, when they cut over to the white family, it's Tim Heidecker, Elizabeth Moss, and those twins, which is great shit.
It's two awful, shitty twins.
Oh, so good. and like when the kids start killing the twins, oh, and you're like, yes, murder those twins. I was like, okay, we're with this family. And then when their double showed up, I was like, oh, hello. Hello, yeah. Acting exercise for Elizabeth Moss. Thank you. Yeah, so good. Yeah, so they're
overall pretty good, guys.
My colleague Richard Lawson didn't like it. What's it? Okay, so to once again talk about like who should write about what kind of movie sort of thing, right? Which is, you know, been something that I've been talking about a lot this week. Richard was assigned our review for our website, vanityfair.com. I don't know if you've heard of it. And, you know, and then Cam is doing, an essay for us. And Richard saw the movie and didn't like it. And you can read his review. It's very thoughtful. But he texted me and he was so, like, freaked out and upset that he didn't like it. Because he's like, okay, here comes me, like the white guy being like this movie about possibly the black experience in America isn't very good. And it's like, I don't know. It's a complicated aspect of what's going on with criticism right now. Like, I think it's so important that we have a diversity of voices and diversity of opinions, but it's also like, I understand that like Richard's like feelings around this. Do you know what I mean? He's like,
yeah,
I'm going to be honest. I didn't like this movie. I'm going to be honest, but like, I'm scared to be honest. You know what I mean? Like
I have some thoughts about this for sure. I think there's two things at work here. And this is the way I try to think about it. First is the responsibility of the editors to find great writers of color to cover films directed, by filmmakers of color, because like you've been talking about, that's the perspective, but that's really on the editors. There's a whole different thing. Like when you're in the moment as the person reviewing it, I think the argument really does matter. Like you talk like, and Richard is great at this, which is, I think, why he'll be fine, which I imagine is why you texted him back, but I don't know.
You're fucked, Richard.
I said, you screwed, buddy. Bye. Because
it's
like,
it's all about being honest, I guess, and being honest up front, you know, just like you said at the beginning of this, where it's like, I don't know how much two white people and a brown person can really weigh in on all of this. But we can talk about our experience and whether it resonated with us. And I think that's still fair. And I think that's the best version of criticism. Where you get into the danger zones is the sort of, the folks that make their reviews more than just their interaction with the movie, and they start reading into. I always remember this line. I don't remember which old guy critic taught me or told me this, but it was like, don't review the audience, review the movie and your experience with the movie. So I've always felt like as long as you're doing that, you're good. But that's a good point. It's something we all think about now. But I really do think that that's on like the editors, people like me who hire people to write, need to think more about this, and be more proactive. So those are my thoughts.
I would say it's maybe not as much about race as Richard thinks. If like he wanted to throw that out there. So the whole concept of the tethered and our experience with them popping up specifically in 1986 and doing Hands Across America is that it's class primarily. The race is definitely there because it's a black family leading this horror, and they're sort of like attempting to be as materialistic as the white family that, you know, also gets killed. But I think the concept of the tethered, and especially the use of the people on the boardwalk to show that in the movie, makes it much more about how the classes are tethered and we don't want them to switch. And, but even if we did, we might still be tethered to them because that's something, you know, we were able to make copies, but we weren't able to divide the soul. So we were able to make capitalism and we were able to make more purchasers, but we weren't necessarily able to make ourselves feel better about ourselves. So, I mean, it's not going to help him liking the movie anymore, probably.
I mean,
or if you don't like the movie.
His review's written. It's a great review. You should go read it. It's a dissenting review.
We're using him as a stand-in. If you don't like the movie and it's not necessarily because you're some sort of weird race blind person. I don't think it's like Get Out was that was part of the whole premise.
I mean, so like,
you missed it.
I was reading this piece, on The Undefeated that I referenced earlier. And like Jordan Peele says in that piece to corroborate what you're saying, this isn't as much about race as Get Out was in his view. But then the woman interviewing him, like says in that piece, I disagree with him. And like, what's interesting is that if Jordan Peele is, doing this whole death of the author thing, I'm not going to explain, so I'm going to let you talk about it. Then, I mean, all opinions are valid. And, if black people or white people or brown people or whoever see this movie and say it is about, the black experience, then I'm not gonna like argue with that. Do you know? Like,
oh, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because we're all gonna read. I mean, even if Jordan Peele tells us what it is, you can still have a different read on it. It's weird to then say that the movie is bad because of that, because he is the author of the movie. But you know, like, I think the great thing about movies like Us and movies like Get Out and movies that are made by like people who think deeply about the details of their films, which is Jordan Peele at his core. That's exactly what he's doing. Is that, you know, there isn't a right answer to any of it. So everyone's experience with it's going to be super different. And that's great, because otherwise it's all just noise and we all see the same noise. So the discussions that we're going to have, about this movie are more interesting to me than, you know, lesser films.
For like with Get Out, I had limited experience with code switching because of the way I grew up, so like a lot of that was I was watching it like all non-black audiences were watching it and sort of like getting that peek into it. Us and I think like Sorry to Bother You are movies that played to me as like political beliefs and my beliefs about how society ran, even though their plots, I think, are very distinctly about being black. Sorry to Bother You, very obviously, Us, just by the presentation. But the part that, yeah, speaks to me and that I hope speaks to people who like this movie, is the it's all of us part, of the thematic complexities.
I like the class. The class read is interesting. I'm going to keep that in mind when I see this again, because I think that I didn't catch that, but I feel that now. I like when I learn stuff from you guys. I've learned a lot in this episode.
I learned a lot from you.
Well, good. I'm sure this won't be the last time any of us will be writing or talking or discussing Us. But do we have any closing thoughts for the people that have listened to all the spoilers?
Yeah, if you made it far and you're not either sold, why you made it this far.
Do you guys know specifically in your mind and have something that you'd like to share about what about the ballet made the tethered realize she was special?
Oh.
Because in theory, even if she was... Was she actually controlling her double?
Yeah, like, I don't know.
Above ground, like that she was actually dancing.
This is where it gets a little weird for me because it's like, how did that work if they switched when they were little? Right? We're assuming they switched when they were little.
Well, they switched when they did that, and then at some point she gave up dance, but I think she switched before the dance, or
she
got
switched
before the dance.
Yeah.
So then Lupita's talking, she said, and then that moment when I saw the face of God and they're intercutting with the dance, and then all the tethered come in and sort of to the one who was dancing in the hallway sort of huddle around her, and that's sort of the idea of when this started. So, and then there's the psychologist is saying, you know, that's the outlet, that's the true outlet, and that's presumably how this other learns to eventually talk. It's like
so, and then
the creativity of it.
The larger backstory too, then, of the tethered is that it was an experiment where some government agency was creating clones underground to try to control the people on the surface.
Right.
So I think what it's meant is that somewhere in that dance, that expression that the tethered was doing on the surface made it click. Like that's when it started working because they had abandoned the experiment long time ago because it didn't work. So that was like the moment where like everybody got switched on. That was my interpretation of it.
Yeah. But like, what about the ballet specifically? I guess maybe I don't even have a good answer for this myself. Like, are they saying that like there's these moments of creativity and self-expression that can transcend whatever the tether represents to you? Like, does this movie have like a weird hopeful way out?
I mean, it is
at
about
the end of its very depressing.
It is about
story.
Someone treated very poorly as a child, the result of some sort of weird experiment, who does escape. So it's a very hopeful story for one character.
True.
So
but I mean, also in this, she escapes and the majority of society falls to the other end of the tethered,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting. Anyway, and then like stuff like why do they wear those fingerless gloves on their left hand? I'm going to be thinking about this movie for a long time.
Me too. Because I feel like it had something to do with the handcuffs. Like maybe she damaged her hand getting out of those handcuffs eventually. When she handcuffed her to the right,
because all the tethered wear those gloves. Like Tim Heidecker has one, and Elizabeth Moss has one.
Well, she's a style icon for the tethered.
It's good. Yeah, I don't know. And then you think if they were like, does it have anything to do with Hands Across America? I don't
understand the scissors thing. Well, I guess other than just the cutting of the tether,
right? Presumably,
oh,
that's
okay.
It.
No, yeah, nope. I get it now.
The untethering.
It's untethering. Yeah, okay. All right. Good one, Jordan Peele.
I'm probably going to be seeing this again, so at least I can understand it better. And
Yeah, I'll watch it again. I don't even like scary stuff, and I'll watch this one again.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's what I have to do. I have to figure out when and how I'm going to get Java to watch this. That took like months for Get Out. Maybe this one. No, this one's actually kind of worse in the theater. I got to figure it out. But we are going to leave you to figure it out yourselves, listeners. Feel free to email us your thoughts on us spoily things at stormofspoilers@gmail.com. I would love to read them. And I know that feeling that you're having right now, listening to the podcast where you've just seen us and you have a ton of questions. Hopefully this was somewhat helpful. Neil.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I would say, what are we doing next week? But what are we doing next week?
Well, we're not doing anything super special. We are going to be off next week, as we prepare for what can only be called the ultimate endgame experience event. That's a thing I just made up right now. Anyway,
so much coverage. All three of us will die.
As we've talked about before, we are going to have a big April. We have a big April and May planned. We're going to be doing Game of Thrones, and we're going to do some Avengers Endgame in there, a full episode for Avengers Endgame. And so we're taking next week off. We're going to get prepped for that. We're going to get ourselves ready, get the podcast a little spit shine, and then we're off. It'll be Game of Thrones. The Game of Thrones event begins.
We get to finally go back to the Citadel of a Crazy Town.
We will be.
It's been gathering
dust
for
off
years.
The Citadel. We have to sort of see which books have not rotted, and we'll have to figure out this whole Game of Thrones thing as our watch comes to a close.
Yes, I'm so excited to turn back to the cacophony of in-jokes and references that we've built over 5 years that are specifically about Game of Thrones.
I have to remember all the jokes.
Yeah, we have Game of Thrones jokes, and we have OA jokes, and we have Tremors jokes. And if you know all three of those jokes, you're going to really enjoy this end season.
Only one of them is popular.
Yeah, also tell your friends, because they should all know what you're talking about. Excellent. Until then, where could people find more of our work online? Let's start with Joanna Robinson, because she hasn't said anything in a while.
You can find me on VanityFair.com, or you can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This. If you're into Game of Thrones, which if you listen to this podcast, you might be, I am doing a rewatch project for Vanity Fair with my colleague Richard Lawson on the Still Watching feed. So we've got a bunch of great interviews with people who worked on Game of Thrones. We're counting down our top 15 episodes. It's a really fun project, so check it out.
And Mr. Neil Miller.
You can get me over filmschoolrejects.com, where we're also about to drop a bunch of Game of Thrones stuff. It's crazy how that happens. You can also follow me on Twitter at rejects. And don't forget to email the show if you have anything to say to us, stormofspoilers@gmail.com. Follow the show on Twitter at stormofspoilers.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. You're going to be able to find my upcoming Game of Thrones coverage on Thrillist.com. But if you go to Polygon.com right now, I've narrowed down the MCU movies to the completely essential ones to rewatch before Endgame. It is not that many, totally doable. You have time. Go check it out. And as always, I'm going to, especially since we got a review that we've been successful with some people, if you have managed not to fall down in 2019, be strong, stay upright, don't fall down 2019. And we'll see you in 2 weeks. Player, give me some brew and I might just chill. But I'm the type that like to light another joint like Cypress Hill. I still do these spit loogies when I puff on it. I got some bucks on